All right, everybody, welcome. It is episode 18 of The Work, the first episode of May. In fact, we are on the mic May 1st, 2011. Thank you for joining us. I'm Bonnie Gillespie, your host. Ryan Basham is not with us this week because he's out caucusing in Sacramento. That's what she said. And so, of course, we have the lovely stand-in, Miss Carolina Gropa.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us, Carolina.
Of course.
As always, our engineer, producer, and haysayer, Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And joining us for the interview segment today, we have Eric Lane.
Woohoo!
Hello.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks
and
so
let's just
me.
Toss things right over to Carolina for some industry news.
So first up in the news today, we have a awesome article from the Huffington Post about Kristen Wiig and this film called Bridesmaid. You guys might have seen posters for it around town that she wrote and stars in. And Keith sent this to me, and he's got, like, really strong opinions on it. So I'm going to let him tackle this one.
Well, sure. First of all, this article in the Huffington Post was written by Jamie Denbo, who Bonnie and I have known for
about a decade. Well, 8 years.
We first met her at 15 Minutes of Femme, and she is brilliant. Her urging is that everyone go out and see this movie because it is a female-written, female-driven, female-starring piece with brilliant comedians. She believes that pieces that are written and driven by women are looked at with extra scrutiny in Hollywood. Everyone in the Hollywood money machine, all of the producers and whatever, are saying, well, we're not going to greenlight your female-driven and written piece because we're hanging on to see how Bridesmaids does. Because if Bridesmaids tanks, then, you know, we're not going to fund the next series.
Wow.
Well, it's true. Everybody's looking at Bridesmaids to see how it goes because it's a female-written and driven piece. But the reality, in my observation, is that that's the way every relatively new writing team goes. You know,
sure.
The reason that Jamie puts forth this please go out and see it thing has everything to do with the fact that there are so few female-driven pieces that get the green light, that every single one of them is important. And she mentions things like, you know, when a superhero movie tanks, they don't stop making superhero movies.
Thank you, Hulk.
And so basically what's going on is we're trying to push the wheel forward of female-driven comedy because there's this one. Everybody's paying a lot of attention to it. The reality is people pay attention to movies that do well or don't do well all the time. Having said that, I think that, you know, everybody should go see it because it's going to be funny as hell.
Yeah.
May 13th. I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be there too.
We should double date.
Actually, I'm going to be reviewing with Jen Page.
Yeah, he already has a date.
Round table?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. Very cool.
He's not taking me to his fancy girl movie.
No.
It'll be interesting to see how Kristen Wiig's career progresses after this film. The New York Times just did a piece on her. The interviewer talks about how she's so different from what you would imagine her to be. She's very quiet, as most comedians tend to be, I would assume, like, very quiet, very private. And that even Tina Fey says that what makes her different, she's got, like, this well of oddball characters. That's, like, her niche. She's, like, always playing this, like, weird kind of girl.
Mm-hmm.
She talks in the article about how she's got a lot of anxiety to see how this is going to play out.
I hope it goes well for her.
And yeah, I hope it goes well, because I think she deserves it.
Because in this one, at least looking from the preview, it looked like she's kind of playing the straight man.
Yeah, for the first time. And I think that this is not her comfort zone to have to be the straight character, so it'll be interesting to see.
She probably has 3 or 4 deals in development that are riding on how well this one does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would make me nervous, too.
Yeah.
So let's look at other news top. I think we had a really good box office
weekend. A Fast Five. Who would have thunk it, right? Broke records from the first time around. It's already made $80 million in the North American market just this weekend. And previously, on the 4th Fast and the Furious, it made $71 million. So it's looking like it's going to...
Well, and internationally this weekend, I think it's already hit $165 million, according to
Deadline.
Yeah, it says
half a billion globally. That's
ridiculous.
You know what that means. Get ready for Fast 6.
Can't wait.
They call it Six Shooter.
Yeah, we got to come up with clever names for the franchise.
I got to say that as formula action movies go, the combination of Vin Diesel and Jordana Brewster is just smoking hot. I don't think that those guys can make a bad movie.
That's quite a bold statement.
Mm.
What else we got?
Wired has a story about this gentleman, Wes DeSoto. FBI just raided his home because he was uploading screeners that he was getting from SAG.
Allegedly,
to the piratebay.org, which you should not know what that is, but if you do, well, there you go. Movies that he uploaded was, you know, the Oscar screeners like The King's Speech and 127 Hours, Fighter, Black Swan, etc.
The FBI raided his home. I mean,
they
for
took
the
everything.
Feds
yeah.
to get involved is a pretty significant issue.
Yeah.
And the AMPTP came out saying that 2011 is the year that they're combating piracy. One of the things that I can't stand when they say, when you're pirate a movie, you're not just taking money from the big producer guys and the big studio heads. You're taking it from the makeup artist and the grip. And then, and first of all, that's a load of fucking crap.
How do you really feel, Keith?
the grips and the makeup artists and all of those people do not get residuals. They don't get fucking dime one at all.
This is why
fucking
we're rated
bullshit.
Explicit right here.
And it pisses me off that the AMPTP thinks they can fucking lie to America.
No, okay, but the truth is, pirating movies does take money out of some pocketbooks.
There are those who disagree with that statement.
Okay.
And the reality is, most people who pirate movies would not pay to have those movies anyway. But they pirate them and they download them and they spread them and increase the fan base for the characters and the actors and whatever. And so there is a huge argument to be made that what's really going on with pirated movies, and this is my opinion, is that what's really going on is piracy is kind of a form of advertisement that the producers don't have to pay for. But it increases the fan base. When you run the numbers, let's throw some fake numbers out there so that I can illustrate my point. Let's say a certain movie comes out like Fast Five. In China, they make 1 million bootleg copies of Fast Five in the theater, and they sell that for 50 cents a piece. So that's $500,000 that they are making and generating with pirated stuff. Of that 1 million copies that they sold for 50 cents a piece, I would imagine that maybe 500 of the people who bought that 50 cent thing would have bought a $10 DVD or a $20 DVD. And so what really is going on is the AMPTP is paying $3,000 to have 1 million fans of their movie. And I'm sorry, but that's just good advertising dollars.
And that's where my question lies, is if they are strengthening a fan base, but it's a fan base of people who aren't going to spend money on the product, what does it matter? You know, it's like having tens of thousands of people hit like on Facebook, but until you can convert that into an actual sale of anything, does it really matter?
Based on that, why does anybody spend advertising dollars?
Brand loyalty.
Exactly.
Okay. Probably the news item that I'm most excited about is that the SAG National Board has unanimously voted to go forward with the merger with AFTRA, which is something we've been excitedly predicting for quite some time. I think our prediction was that it would be 18 months before we see merger finally happen, and we were saying that a couple months ago, so we're looking at the end of 2012, which is exactly what they're coming out and saying in their reports now. So last quarter 2012, we should see SAG and AFTRA merging.
I am so excited about this.
Yeah, I really want to see what that's going to look. I mean, I think everybody wants to see what that's going to look like. What's it going to be called? And what's it going to mean for dues and insurance for everybody?
And what happens with pension? I think that's probably one of the bigger issues that's not being dealt with immediately, which is what happens to everybody's pension plans and all the amount that's gone in toward for the people who are vested. If they're in both unions, do those plans then come together? And that's sticky. I'm not sure how that's going to work, and I think that's the only thing that has people nervous right now.
I'm going to venture another observation here. I think that anybody who is concerned about pension and health and all of those situations should look to what the situation with SAG's pension and health was 78 years ago. 2 years before SAG existed, there wasn't any.
I just figure it's like looking into, like, I'm looking forward to receiving Social Security. Oh, wait, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Well, because there's nobody of my generation that's going to see anything from Social Security.
Well, you know, because the reality is they're not going to merge SAG and AFTRA. They're going to end SAG, they're going to end AFTRA, and they're going to create a new union with all of the previous two unions members. And the reality, and I don't know why people are arguing about this. It doesn't make any sense. We're going to have a new union. It should reasonably have a new pension and health system. And then what they'll do is, and the smart thing to do is, and if you guys are listening to me, SAG board, you should really call me because I have the answer. But what you do is then you do an actuarial table and get some accountants and figure out a merger formula where you can roll over your AFTRA pension and or your SAG pension into the new union's pension and health. And then what each individual actor needs to look at is this. does rolling over make me better or worse off? And then you let each individual SAG member decide on their own whether they want to move their stuff to the new, or have, if you're in SAG, two, one from SAG and one from the other, or if you're AFTRA, two, one from AFTRA and one from the new union, or if you're in all three unions, you have three separate ones.
I'm just looking forward to new cards, like one card in my wallet.
It's the little because, things.
Yeah.
The,
so are you you one of the members of both unions?
I'm in both unions, yeah. And I gotta say not the union, but the card itself, the AFTRA card, is pretty sad.
Yeah, it's a little flimsy.
It's like a little piece of paper, and the SAG one is nice and like, I don't know, it's just got a nice little shine to it. And
yeah.
Okay, so on that note, we will now take it over to the interview portion where we,
yes,
again,
please.
Welcome Eric Lane.
Oh,
yay,
well,
woo-hoo.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
I'm
my
so
God.
Excited to be here.
Thrilled to have you. Now, all right, Eric, you first popped on my radar, I'm going to say in 2008. Does
yes.
that sound right?
2008.
You have had
September,
an amazing few years.
I have,
since
yeah.
then. Take us through a little bit of your history in LA, if you would, please.
Well, I've had quite a history in LA. I'm originally from Houston, and it started off, I got my acceptance letters to the University of Texas and UCLA, mm-hmm. and I looked at these acceptance letters, and I was like, I have two different life journeys, mm-hmm. like, right in front of me, and I decided to follow my dreams and come to LA, and I went to UCLA, so the transition for me to moving to the big city, you know, it wasn't as harsh as it would be for someone who's moving straight from Kansas or something.
Because you had the college buffer?
Yeah, I had the college buffer, I had friends here, I knew Westwood. When you're at UCLA, it's like a little bubble, and
that's true.
You don't really get out of Westwood. So after I graduated in 2006, I got to experience what it's like being an actor sitting on your hands for 2 years.
Ouch.
And that was not a good experience because it's like you're waiting for things to come to you, and you just feel powerless. It wasn't until I came across your showcase and then also took classes from my acting teacher, Bernie Hiller, that my life and my acting started to change, and
that's so cool.
So that's where I am today.
So yeah, let's talk about where you are today, because I'm taking a look at some of the credits that have piled onto your resume since we first met, and I'm mostly excited about one that I haven't been able to see yet. Which
yes.
Tell us about Enlightened.
Well, Enlightened is a new show that will be on HBO. I don't know when. We don't have an air date yet. Hopefully, it'll be coming out soon. I got in the pilot, and I got to work with Laura Dern and Mike White, and there are also some really wonderful people in it, like Luke Wilson and Diane Ladd.
Wow.
And some yeah. really just amazing, amazing
baller
people.
Baller over here. I had no
insane.
Idea.
Oh, yeah. You're sitting next to a superstar.
And he was just a dude who wore, like, Tetris boxes.
Well,
for
yeah. it's a Rubik's Cube.
Oh,
but,
whatever.
That shows the generation difference there.
Exactly, yeah. That was the second Rubik's Cube that has
it?
Been
oh.
made. Got to do a scene with Laura Dern, and you know, it's just, I've been playing kind of the waiting game with it. I had to, when I auditioned for it, I had to wait all of Thanksgiving to find out if I got a callback.
And let's get specific. We're talking
yes.
2009,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 2009.
I want to make sure people understand yeah. they're listening to this podcast in May 2011.
Yeah.
And we're talking about an audition you had in November
of 2009.
Okay.
Of 2009. So
basically, it's instant gratification.
Absolutely,
yeah.
yes. When you
yeah.
move to Hollywood and start acting, it's instant gratification.
Instant.
Yeah, it's a marathon here. It's not a sprint. You know, you're here for the long haul. This whole experience I've had with Enlightened is just one huge example of
is
that.
Is it enlightening? The experience.
Okay, so sorry. Thanksgiving 2009, you're waiting to even hear how it went.
I was waiting to hear a callback, waiting to hear feedback, and then after that, they brought me in, and I read with Laura Dern, and I, you know, was there for Mike White, and then I had to wait all of Christmas and New Year's to hear if I got it, you know, and it's just something where it's like every day that's all you think about. Then I shot it, and then they brought me back, and that was September or so of 2010.
Wait, let's be clear here.
Yes.
You had a character who was a co-star in the pilot, and that was your role.
Yes.
And you shot it.
Yes.
And see, and this is the part you skipped over. They liked your performance so amazingly much.
Not just yes. his performance. They also liked him as a person. He was fun to have on set.
His performance. professional. Sure.
Professional, rock star.
And so they wrote your character back in as recurring.
Yes, yes. And that was huge.
That is
and
huge.
The coolest thing was when they shot me again, I showed up on set and Laura Dern, she was talking to the director, she dropped everything and just gave me a huge hug. Aww. And she was so nice. She introduced me to all these people on set and say, hey, this is Eric, he's a great actor. And she just could not have been nicer to me.
But I think that really underscores the whole people like to work with good people thing.
Yeah.
And we talk about that a lot, that it's, you know, being talented is not enough to get written back in as recurring. Like that's, yes, you're talented, but you're a pleasure to be around. And there's so much downtime when you're on a set where you're just waiting. People want to be around people they like to hang out with.
Yeah, it's very true. And that's kind of an impression that I got from the callback audition was, mm-hmm. it was also a bit of an interview, you know, it wasn't just me reading. It was, are we going to want to hang out with this guy for mm-hmm.
personality check.
Set,
yeah.
You know? And so that was really cool.
And you guys just spoke about this on the episode last week with Ben Whitehair about actors that come in for a co-star and that's mm-hmm. how they become recurring and that's how they get their careers rolling is exactly that.
Sure.
Right.
So,
and it happens instantly.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. let's be clear. It is exactly like Eric said, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so you have to come to LA with realistic expectations. But more than that, you just need to be talented at minimum and a good person.
Yeah.
Because it's then people want to be around you and people love to surround themselves with good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you,
so
you know,
we're kind of confused how I got here.
Honey, everybody's confused how you got here.
Mm-hmm. On a bus or something.
How did that happen?
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I just think about how farther my career would be if I didn't have Keith.
That's fantastic.
Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Where did this took a turn?
Marathon.
Let's talk, Eric, about what took you to South by Southwest recently.
Yes, I did a film that I had a tiny part, but it was a very, very funny part in a movie called Detention that premiered at South by Southwest. Being from Houston, you know, that's kind of like, that's the festival that I really wanted to go to. And when I found out that it got in there, I was like, I have to go to this. That and my best friend lives in Austin, so I was like, oh, I'll have a place to stay, you know?
Sweet.
And like,
and were you able to share the screening with people from your previous life? Like, did you bring friends along?
Well, my friend had to buy the pass. I mean, I had to buy the pass as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I'm like the lead in this thing, you
right.
know? But it was just kind of a dream of mine to go to South by Southwest and see myself there. I gotta recommend it to everyone. If you're frustrated with Fast Five making $80 million and you don't think that there's any good films out there, save up money and go to a film festival like South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I saw some amazing films, really wonderful films.
Low budget indies really
do
have a lot of oomph to them.
Yeah.
If you'll spend the time and you check them out, you can just really feel inspired again.
Yeah. And going to a festival, you know, you never know who you're going to run into. I had a funny experience. I went to this movie and I was standing in line. It was a movie that I watched the trailer for and I was like, yeah, you know, it looks okay, you know, it looks all right. And so I'm standing in line talking to the guy in front of me. Before I said that, which luckily I didn't, I found out that the guy in front of me was the executive producer of the movie. And so he was, you know, it was really cool. You never know who you're going to run into at these festivals.
That's true.
You know, I asked him because his film was in the competition and I was like, well, are there any in the competition that you've seen that maybe, you know, you didn't like? And he just is like looking around like, you know, I can't say anything.
Yeah,
I have to be careful what I say.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really cool experience. Go to South by Southwest.
Now, and let's talk about, you told me when we were together at the LA Actors Tweet Up a couple weeks ago about an audition experience you had.
It was a really cool audition experience that you never know what they are looking for is the lesson of this. I submitted myself for this breakdown that said, you know, no singing is required, but for the audition, they had us singing Lionel Richie's Hello. And I wasn't very familiar with the song, you know. It was just a song that I didn't really know very well. So I kind of learn it and everything like that, and I'm at the casting office, and I'm waiting outside, and there's two guys in front of me. Both of them sounded like they needed to be on American Idol. They both had the most beautiful voices, and I've never had a moment where I was like, I'm not gonna get this. Like, there's no way. Like, I was so close to leaving the audition, and I never, ever, ever leave an audition. I'm like, why not? But I was so close to leaving. So I go in, I have like the sheet of paper in front of me with the lyrics. And you can see where this is going. I start singing and I just feel this like, I was like, you know, I'm just not connecting with who I'm talking to, you know? So I feel this like surge of courage, and I throw the lyrics down and I take this big step forward and I start singing with gusto, and then I forget the lyrics. So I was just embarrassed, you know. I recovered, and so I moved on. A few weeks later, you know, I was just like, there's no way I'm getting that. And a few weeks later, I get the call, and they're like, hey, we want you to have the part. And I was like, I'm the guy that forgot the lyrics.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, in that moment, you brought everything to the character that we were looking for. In that moment, when you forgot it, I knew you were the guy.
I love that.
Isn't that a great story?
I love that.
That's fantastic.
You know, we say all the time that you as the actor are not allowed to judge your own audition or performance or anything because you're too wrapped up in it. I can't even count the number of auditions that we've seen where the people thought they did terribly. And the reality was, because of whatever it was they were doing that made them think they were terrible, they were alive and open and so moving.
Totally.
That you know, okay, I can work with that guy. So all actors out there who are listening to this, please take Eric's story to heart. And don't judge your own fucking auditions. Jesus Christ.
I gotta say, I was even, when I was driving to set, I was like, I'm gonna get there and they're gonna be like, oh, we got the guy that forgot the song.
Yeah, you know, like, shoot, this wasn't
like,
the right guy.
We were supposed to get the guy before him, you know?
Because that happens all the time. So I'm watching you gesture with your hands as you're talking, Eric, and I know our podcast listeners can't enjoy the experience as much as I do, but your hands are gorgeous.
Oh, well, thank you.
Would you tell me a little bit about your hands career?
Yes, well, I work as a hand model. Which, it's so funny. Like, when I was in high school, my best friend's little sister, she would look at my hands and she would like compare the size of her hands to my hands, and mine would just be like a tiny bit bigger than hers, and she's like, you have such small little hands, you know? And like, I'm like, shut up, you know? Like, come to find out, I can make money with them.
Off your small little
hands. Which is, it's so ridiculous, the career, like, funny.
Where have I seen your hands on television recently?
I was David Spade's hand double on a 7-Up commercial where he's moving into the mansion and everything.
I love this commercial.
And it was really funny, like, you know, the whole shoot, they're like, they get, you know, David's like, you know, can I get another shot? And, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, of course. And they're like, David, you sure you don't want another shot? You're fine? So when they wrapped him, you know, then they're like, it's nighttime, and they're like, all right, let's get the hand model in here and let's finish this thing, you know? And they're like...
But you had to be there all day while he was there.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's kind of how it goes. And then I did an HTC commercial for the phones. I've done a thing for a Nintendo Wii commercial that I still haven't seen for a video game. And then I've also done one for a new Scrabble, like, card game that I still haven't seen. It was stop motion. It was really cool.
Ooh, very cool. And have you had the coveted every hand model's dream, the Apple job?
Well, not yet. Oh. But I might have an audition coming up. And I actually, when the iPhone came out, they sent out a breakdown on LA Casting. They were like, Apple wants new hands or whatever. And they're like, we need people with no hair or scars on the back of their hands and medium-sized glove. And I was like, oh, you know, I got that.
Done.
So I sent a picture and they brought me in. I got a call back. And then I had to do a video test. And I didn't do too well because I don't have an iPhone. And like, and I didn't have one. Because the first audition was, it was just a still shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it was going to be video. And this was before I had a hand model agent. I have a hand model agent.
I actually got called out of retirement. I'm a former hand model.
Yeah.
I got called out of retirement when they started rolling out the iPad. And Keith's old agent called me and said, I want to send you in on these iPad auditions. But of course, they're all secret product auditions. When those breakdowns go out, they don't say that they're Apple auditions because they don't want people to know what their next campaign is going to be.
Yeah.
And so then you go in the room and they're like, well, we just have a sample product that we want you to interact with.
Yeah.
And so then you're playing with an iPad going, this is an iPad commercial. Oh my God, if I book this, I'm huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous.
With so many tech gadgets out nowadays, there's so much need for that, you know? And I mean, even there's a new Burger King commercial where they're kind of making fun of the Apple commercials where they're swiping and the lady has a chicken nugget or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like doing the little, I can't, doing the thing where you zoom in on the iPhone, you know? Yeah.
So there's more work for hand models today than in years past because of technology.
Yeah. Totally, totally, totally.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, what would you like to tell our listeners before we wrap up our interview, Eric? What sort of advice do you have for folks who are trying to follow in your footsteps?
I would say embrace who you are and what you bring. Fall in love with what you can do. There's a great quote by this lady, Beth Grant. She was the Sparkle Motion lady in Donnie Darko. She said her acting teacher told her, because she kept trying to be like the pretty girl and stuff like that, and you know, she doesn't really play that, and her acting teacher was like, why are you trying to be a piece of gold? You're the salt of the earth. There's beauty in that, you know? And it was just a really cool quote. So just fall in love with who you are and what you bring.
I like that.
Oh, thanks.
There you go. And how can we keep up with you? And do you have a website, Twitter? Where should your fans show up?
Friend me on Facebook and say you heard the interview. I am on Twitter. I need to tweet more.
Yes,
I'm actively trying to tweet a lot
last
more.
Last we saw his Twitter, I think he had like 5 tweets in a year.
He's got like 8 now.
He's
up to 8.
He's doing it.
I'm pushing it.
Yeah.
I'm pushing 8.
3 are retweets.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I'm, I know. It's sad. It's sad. But I'm twitter.com/EricLane with a C-H. That's not the username. It's Eric Lane. Just my name.
But Eric is spelled with C-H.
Yes, Eric is spelled E-R-I-C-H.
L-A-N-E.
Yes,
got
L-A-N-E.
It.
Because he's fancy.
Woohoo.
Thanks for being here, Eric.
Thank you so
really
much for having
it.
Me. It was so much fun.
All right, we throw it back to Carolina for some not really news.
Not really news. This week, Steve Carell. This is a farewell episode on The Office. It was heartbreaking. I watched it.
I didn't watch it. So can you give me a little, like, what touched you so?
He decided to lie to everybody in the office and say that he was leaving the next day. But he was actually leaving that day. That 4 o'clock, that was his last day. And so he didn't want to make a big fanfare of him leaving. And so everybody's planning this party for him the next day. And it was just really touching. And the whole time Pam goes out to get Shredders, which I thought was kind of funny. She went to look at Shredders. And he's like, when is Pam coming back? When is Pam coming back? And then she doesn't come back. And he goes to the airport. And the very last shot is he's like, so I guess, guys, let me know if you guys ever aired this documentary. And he takes the microphone thing off and he's like, I guess I don't need this anymore. And he walks away. And in the distance, he's like over there. Pam runs into frame without her shoes, like in the airport. And they have this conversation that you don't hear, that you can only imagine is like the most touching, like deep thing they could have possibly said
so
to each
like
other.
So it's like the end of Lost in Translation, where you have to wonder, what did they say?
Spoilers!
So,
no,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
And what made it so is that it's not just like, oh, well, that actor Steve Carell is leaving because he is a douchebag and it's known on set. Like, everybody loves him and he's been a part of that family. So you know that those goodbyes were so genuine because they made that show together. And I was just like, oh.
Now, and who comes in his place? What's the...
They don't know yet. Will Ferrell. This is what happens when you speak too much Portuguese in a week. I'm, like, losing my English. But seriously, I'm, like, things backwards. Will Ferrell came in the last couple episodes to guest star as the boss that replaces him. But it's up in the air if he's going to stay. Because he's, like, crazier than Michael. He's just, like, bonkers. And so everybody's like, what's going to happen? Like, within the episode.
Right.
And so we don't know. I have a feeling, though, that they're going to bump up Dwight. I think Dwight's going to be.
That's Rainn Wilson, right?
Yeah, Rainn Wilson's character. I think that would be very interesting. So,
it'll
be cool to see how it fares, you know?
It's always tough. Whenever somebody, obviously the lead in a show leaves the show, that's really tough to kind of keep it going. But I hope they're able to.
But, you know, it's good for him. He wants to spend time with his kids, and it's great that he's got that priority, and that's awesome. So,
Well, all right, then. That's it for this episode of The Work. Nobody's jumping ship and leaving the series that we've put together here yet. Yet, right, Ryan? We will see Ryan Basham back here next week after he is back from Sacramento, where he's doing his Democratic Party caucusing. And
caucusing.
So, of course, you can always find us on Twitter at @the_work, podcastingthework.com, on iTunes, where you can rate, subscribe, and review. Thank you very much for that. And until next week, we've had Carolina Gropa subbing in for Ryan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Special guest, Eric Lane.
Oh, thank you so much.
Engineer, producer, and haysayer Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And I'm Bonnie Gillespie. I've been your host, and until next time, keep creating.